Greetings and good morning. Thanks for listening to Mountain Grown Public Radio, KVNF. It's 8 o'clock, and here's your local newscast for Wednesday, March 27th. The Montrose Daily Press reports that the man who died Monday after shooting at Montrose Sheriff's deputies has been formally identified as Kent Calhoun, 52, of the Crawford Mayor area. Cause and manner of death are pending an autopsy. The Montrose County Coroner said he expects to issue a preliminary finding today. Calhoun was found dead in his E81 Road residence early Monday. Sheriff's deputies Corey Larson and Dustin Harlow had gone to the home after a woman living there reported domestic violence. Calhoun fired on them when they came to the door. Larson was struck twice, and a shot fired at Harlow missed and struck the deputy's vehicle. Officers responded to the shooting later and found Calhoun dead inside the home. He had a history of domestic violence and alcohol-related offenses. Deputy Larson was shot in the abdomen and chest. One of the rounds was stopped by his protective vest. He was treated at St. Mary's Hospital in Grand Junction and was released late Tuesday. Crawford resident Craig Childs writes about his adventures in some of the West's forgotten public lands in High Country News' current travel issue. He spoke to Nelson Harvey of KDNK in Carbondale about why vast and open spaces are so important to our sense of Western identity.
The Gold Buttes of Nevada, Arizona's Agua Fria National Monument, or the Canyon Country of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument in Utah. The Bureau of Land Management calls these places National Landscape Conservation Areas. But what does that mean? They're not quite wilderness, they're a far cry from civilization, but they're right where a self-described BLM groupie like Craig Childs wants to be.
Well, there are pieces of land that are in all kinds of environments, you know, desert, mountains, forests, rivers, and they're kind of spots where the land is recognized and protected on a landscape scale, meaning a whole mountain range or an entire watershed or a canyon is set aside, not quite as firmly set aside as the Park Service and not always a true federal wilderness, but generally just beautiful places that are put in a spot where you can say, okay, most of this land is protected. It's not, you know, not incredibly protected, but at least we're conserving some of it.
Childs has practically made a career out of getting lost in the wilderness, traveling through what he calls the interstitial places, the cracks in the sidewalk, and then writing about it.
I follow these places around. I go look for the wild spots in the lower 48, you know, and they're inevitably on public lands. And that's what my life is built around in many ways. You know, I work my tasks and my jobs like everybody, but I really go out there and spend every moment that I can away in these landscapes. So
for him, the ability to get out of your car on BLM lands and just start walking, the ability to roam in any direction you like, is a central part of what it means to be a Westerner. Without that, he says he just might have to move to another country.
I think it really formed who I am. I think it forms all the people out here. This is a different kind of landscape than a place that's just consumed with boundaries, borders, fences, no trespassing signs. It's a different way of looking at a place.
What you'll find in these in-between places that Childs favors is hard to predict. There might be power lines. There might be ancient Indian petroglyphs. There are no designated scenic overlooks, no guided hikes. And what you bring to these places is your own decision as well.
I guess what I'm pushing in this article is saying go to the landscape however you want to. You can carry 50 pounds of gear and go with GPS and know every coordinate of where you're heading, or you can run with a bag of peanuts for 3 days and scout out your route with your own eyes instead of following trails.
Another thing you're unlikely to find in these untrammeled places is many trails. Stacks of rocks called cairns may mark some routes, but when these multiply too quickly, when you can see more than a single cairn at once, even some BLM rangers advocate knocking them down. When Childs learned this, he was happy to oblige.
You know, if you're in really remote country and there are cairns all over the place and this isn't a major trail, this isn't where people walk, you you knock them down. That's, I mean, not everybody does that, of course. Some people build them up, obviously. But these places get swarmed, and we turn them into someplace completely different. We cover them with trails and signs, and you see people coming and going. And I think these places are set aside land use-wise, and I think in our psyches, too, because they are where you are not told where to go.
There's a pretty good chance that the kind of rugged, spontaneous use that Childs favors puts him squarely in the minority of people who use public lands. There's another article in the High Country News travel issue about changing trends in public land use, claiming that people have less time, less money, and even less desire to venture into the more remote and undeveloped public lands. And what many are really looking for these days is convenience. But Childs says there's still an active minority that depends on these places. And besides, if you live in the West, chances are good that they're easy to get to.
But people still do go out there. I mean, there are people that I know who are, you know, poor or rich. I know people across the spectrum who travel in these landscapes. I think there's just a certain segment of the population that always needs these wilder places. And I think there are a lot of us in the West who need them. And the kinds of lands that I'm writing about here are ideal for those who don't have so much money or time. I mean, they're nearby. You can shoot straight toward them. You don't have to drive an extra 4 hours to get to a park entrance.
To be clear, Childs says he has nothing against the well-known, well-marked, or well-traveled national parks. But this story is about less regulated places, places where we can roam where we like. For Childs, that's what the West is all about. I'm Nelson Harvey.
The Aspen Times reports that an audit of Colorado's medical marijuana regulations says they are badly enforced and in need of overhaul. State auditors released a blistering 89-page report Tuesday outlining a number of failures. After spending about $1.1 million on a seed-to-sale tracking system, including video surveillance, the Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division fell $400,000 short of implementation, and the system is not in operation. Funding problems have led to painfully slow issuances of licenses. Colorado has 1,440 marijuana-related businesses, and licensing took an average of 23 months. After an initial rush of money from marijuana licenses, more than $8 million in the first 2 months, the division has racked up 19 months of operational losses. Auditors identified about $760,000 in underreported sales taxes from 56 dispensaries in fiscal years 2011 and 12. Overall, auditors concluded that the state agency, quote, has not adequately defined the oversight activities it must perform or determined the resources it needs to implement the regulatory system envisioned to oversee Colorado's emerging medical marijuana industry, end quote. A bill to repeal Colorado's death penalty died in a committee hearing yesterday over concerns that Governor John Hickenlooper would veto the bill. Last week, the governor told Democratic lawmakers he had serious reservations about the measure. Benta Berkland has more from the state capitol.
There was a lot of last-minute scrambling before the hearing as lawmakers huddled in the hallway to try and get a sense of the governor's position. Just a few days ago, Democratic sponsor Claire Levy of Boulder was adamant she had the votes to move the bill forward. And on Tuesday, she made her final pitch to the House Judiciary Committee.
The only thing that the death penalty does is give some feeling of retribution. I reject retribution as a valid purpose of taking the life of another person.
But despite her plea, Levy says she knew going into the hearing that the bill wouldn't pass.
There was concern that if the governor wasn't going to sign the bill, then people didn't want to take a vote that may have been difficult for them to explain to their constituents. I'm disappointed that we have not taken this on and addressed it the way we should, which is through a deliberate process of extended debate.
The measure failed 6-4. Democratic freshman Representative Brittany Pedersen of Lakewood joined all the Republicans on the committee to vote against the bill.
Ultimately, my constituents don't support this issue. And with the recent tragedies in Aurora, you know, this is something that's very personal for people and an issue that we need to do a lot more work on and reaching out to our districts.
Representative Lois Cord of Denver was the other Democratic no vote. She appeared visibly upset and says it was a tough decision because she personally agrees with repealing the death penalty.
In my heart, this is absolutely the right thing to do. I know we should repeal the death penalty. I also know that the governor has said that he is struggling with it and that he is not confident that the people of Colorado are comfortable with this approach at this point.
The other Democrats on the committee, including Chairman Daniel Kagan of Denver, voted to support a repeal, saying the death penalty is expensive, arbitrary, discriminatory, and prone eventually to error.
As long as human beings are making these decisions, there will be someone, somewhere, who is sentenced to death for a crime they did not commit. I cannot be a party to that. My conscience will not permit it.
But Republican Representative Bob Gardner of Colorado Springs says the death penalty is used sparingly in Colorado, with only 3 people currently on death row.
I do not think that for those of us who support the death penalty, that we somehow are less civilized or that we somehow are doing that out of seeking revenge and retribution.
Gardner and other Republicans on the committee say they believe the death penalty should be an option
for a category of crimes that represent the worst of evils. The death penalty is appropriate.
Sponsors say they'll try again during another legislative session. Several years ago, when Democrats controlled both legislative chambers, a repeal failed narrowly by 1 vote. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
And finally today, we have our Crane Report. On Tuesday night, March 26th, Evelyn Horn reported 1,900 cranes at Fruit Growers Reservoir. She says the bird watching was awesome, and today should be just as magnificent. And that concludes your local newscast for Wednesday. For Mountain Grown Public Radio, KVNF, my name is Eric Gould. Have a great hump day, everybody, and thanks so much for listening.